It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. A new clinic opened today in Addison that aims to help veterans by giving them and their families free mental health care. The Military Family Clinic at MetroCare is part of a network of clinics nationwide. The North Texas Clinic is the third to open. The goal is to provide care in addition to what the Veterans Affairs Centers offer. Dr. John Burris is the CEO of MetroCare, which provides mental health care. He says for some veterans, returning home from deployment can be stressful.
It's a free, immediately available resource for veterans and their loved ones who are struggling with issues that have arisen because of or subsequent to deployment in any service era, though primarily in the post-9/11 era. VA is a wonderful service for a lot of folks, but they have no real resources for family members or loved ones.
The clinic is part of the Cohen Veterans Network. The network says about 40% of recent military members don't seek treatment. Many of them suffer from what Burris calls the invisible wounds of war. That includes post-traumatic stress and head trauma.
Most of them come back with other kinds of transition-related challenges as they return and try to restore their civilian life. And the family's trying to grapple with that as well, because you know that's not easy after you've been, again, maybe 2, 3, 4 deployments, and now you're trying to fit back into a life that might be radically different than when you left.
The clinic is helping veterans no matter the reason they left the military. Anthony Hassan oversees the Cohen Veterans Network.
We're seeing all veterans of that era, regardless of discharge status. So we know that many veterans have been separated from military service with less than honorable discharge, which makes them ineligible for care at the VA. We want those veterans to know that you're welcome here.
There are plans to open at least 20 more clinics across the country over the next few years. There's been a lot of debate about the future of Fair Park, but we're going to explore a big event from its past. A 4-day celebration is underway at Fair Park to mark the 80th anniversary of the Texas Centennial Exposition. It was basically a state fair on steroids. The 1936 exposition at Fair Park was a 5-month-long celebration of Texas culture and of the state's independence from Mexico. And many say this event helped put Dallas on the map. Willis Winters is director of the Dallas Park and Recreation Department, and he joins me to talk about the exposition. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
How did the Texas Centennial Exposition begin? How did it come about?
So in 1936, the state of Texas celebrated its 100th anniversary of its independence from Mexico as the Republic. And so in 1936, the state fair or fair park, the fairground, so to speak, were transformed from a state fair into what I call a regional world's fair in 1936, celebrating that time and that event. So in the 30s, there were 6 world's fairs held in the United States. Of those 6 fairs, which represent the great era or epic of world's fairs in America, Fair Park is the only intact exposition site remaining from this great era. And so we've got almost all of the original Art Deco buildings still intact, and this whole the celebration of the World's Fair is represented at Fair Park in that great era in American history.
Take me back to the 1930s when Texas was trying to figure out where to hold this exposition. How did Dallas snag the honor of hosting this event?
It's a typical Dallas story where money speaks, so to speak. So in their bid to the Centennial Commission, put in a bid of $25 million, which no other city could match. That was a lot of money at the time. So we had a huge exposition ground and cash that basically constituted the Dallas bid, and the Centennial Commission awarded the designation as a centennial city to Dallas.
I'm guessing the city, to prepare for an event like this, it involved more than just tents.
Yes, these were, the buildings that were built at Fair Park, again, they incorporated the buildings that were previously here and built for the state fair. And those buildings, some of them dated back to 1905, all received an Art Deco makeover by the centennial architect George Dahl. And these buildings were all built to be permanent. It's a misconception that the buildings of Fair Park were built to be temporary. A lot of other fairs, that was true. But in Dallas, the buildings, the exhibit buildings here, are steel and block and permanent construction.
What kind of events were held at the exposition in 1936?
Mainly exhibitions, indoor exhibitions, and there were a couple of firsts for Dallas and for the Texas Centennial. Number one, it was the first air-conditioned World's Fair in history. So they were advertising that you could walk visitors to the fair. Of course, it was hot that summer in 1936. Visitors to the fair could walk 7 miles through indoor pathways through buildings in air, quote unquote, air conditioned comfort. But mainly people came to the fair to look at exhibits inside these. There's almost 1 million square feet of exhibit halls. And then the Centennial Exposition itself is the event that I described in the book I wrote on Fair Park as, quote unquote, the year that America discovered Dallas. Not Texas, but Dallas. This is the year that people got on trains and came to Dallas to see the exposition, or got in their cars and drove halfway across America. Before that, Dallas was a city of about 300,000 people. It was a successful city, but it was a city that had no national or very low national identity. And I think the Centennial Exposition pushed Dallas to that higher stage. And in the following year, in 1937, with the Pan American Exposition, that was the year that nations from Central and South America came to Dallas and set up exhibits. In my view, it's the first time that Dallas took a step onto the international stage for the very first time.
Willis Winters is the director of the Dallas Park and Recreation Department. Thanks for joining me.
Absolutely, Justin. My pleasure.
The 80th anniversary celebration of the Texas Centennial Exposition runs through Saturday at Fair Park. The Dallas Symphony Orchestra performs tonight at 8, and a fireworks show follows. Dallas bluesman Big Charles Young died last week after an extended illness. KERA's Jerome Weeks has this report on the man who was dubbed the boss of South Dallas blues singers.
Big Charles Young was big. The Dallas native worked as a doorman and bouncer at R.L. Griffith's nightclub, the Blues Palace No. 2 near Fair Park. But for a bouncer, Young was a friendly character who often happily joined the band to belt out some blues.
I was singing at the bar in my
In 2009, Young suffered a pancreatic attack, but he recovered and returned to the Blues Palace, even working there as the house photographer. That same year, in an interview with KERA, Young said he'd first encountered the blues when he was 11 or 12. Friends took him to see Dallas bluesman Willie Willis. But Young's grandmother, who raised him, wouldn't let him play or sing such music.
My grandmother didn't like that, what she called devil music in her house. So I had to wait till I got grown and got away from the house before I could start singing some blues.
So Young came late to singing the blues. It wasn't until the 1990s that friends coaxed him up on stage. In 2008, R.L. Griffith produced Young's first recording. Young also had songs appear in anthologies of Southern Soul. But in later years, he had to sit on stage to sing. Last week, Big Charles Young died under hospice care. He was 69. A wake will be held for him Friday evening at the Golden Gate Funeral Home.
Do the Big Charles swing.
Jerome Weeks, KERA News.
Swing. Do the Big Charles swing.
Mostly clear skies expected this evening. There's a low around 71. Tomorrow should be sunny with a high near 95, and tomorrow night mostly clear, low around 72. It's currently 92 degrees in Dallas, 93 in Fort Worth. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.